morning. I will call to order the 1,301st meeting of the Board of Directors. The agenda before us, I'll entertain approval with the addition of a international travel administrative item. I'd entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. The motion carries. Next, I'd entertain a motion for approval of the minutes of our December 15th meeting.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any comment? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. That motion carries. Next, we have our public comment period. We do have a number of individuals signed up to speak. Speaking rules, look for the time frame here. There is a 2-minute limit to your comments. Ms. Chambliss will alert you when you have 30 seconds remaining. So again, please, given the great number of speakers we have, we will hold you to that 2-minute time period. The first speaker is David Hines with First Transit. The topic is the MV contract.
Fortunate enough to be one of the two finalists for a paratransit contract, which is just begun. And I speak today about some concerns we have from what we read in the paper and seen on the media, that we were told during our debrief session with your staff that our cost per hour was actually lower than the company that was awarded the contract, but that they were chosen because their overall cost was lower because they felt they could be more productive and operate the service less hours. And we understand the action item on the agenda today would grant them more hours and brings into our mind at least the question of were the bids evaluated fairly? Did we in fact calculate correctly the number of hours that it would take to provide the service? And for that reason, we think maybe this needs to be reconsidered. We certainly don't oppose the agenda item. We certainly think the citizens of the D.C. area deserve good paratransit service that we had hoped to provide. But in light of this development, we're requesting that the consideration be done to revisit this contract in a number of months to fairly evaluate what it's going to take to provide the service and who can do it best and at the lowest possible cost. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Our next speaker is Jerry Wasco. The topic, again, is Metro Access.
I am married and we are parents of 7 and 9. I am also employed and have responsibility like any other citizen. I have a disability but manage daily living as same as you or any other human. I am employed from 9 to 4, but because of the poor history good time. My husband and I chose to come on hours because we have not relied on you getting me home when I need to be home. Your history speaks. I have tried many times to use service and you see not able to get me home. Metro access is notorious for failing in getting me to and from work. Sometimes at least it's 2 hours. They often get to me Brooklyn, which caused me to lose this project.
Thank you, Ms. Wasco. I much appreciate your testimony. Our next speaker is Jack Corbett, MetroRiders.org. The topic, WMATA openness and accountability.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I am Jack Corbett, resident of Montgomery County, appearing here for MetroRiders.org. Our organization sent a detailed letter to you yesterday proposing a 7-part program for more openness and public scrutiny of WMATA in 2006. Extra copies are available outside this room on the table. First, thanks to Chairman Kaufman for making an open dialogue with Metro consumers the focus of his year as chair. 3 town hall meetings, this public comment period, simulcasting board meetings, posting committee and board documents on Metro's website, supporting Metro online chats, and launching the first meeting last evening of the Riders Advisory Council. Your leadership, Mr. Chairman, made this all possible. Thank you very much. Many of our 7 recommendations are connected to H.R. 3496, Chairman Davis's legislation offering up to $1.5 billion to WMATA for new buses and cars. We wonder, why has WMATA not endorsed this bill or its general approach? More openness and accountability in exchange for very desperately needed capital funds. Why hasn't WMATA urged Senators Sarbanes, Mikulski, Warner, and Allen to introduce companion legislation? That funding is worth fighting for. We agree with Congressman Wynn, who has urged you to appoint an inspector general now without waiting for the Davis bill to require it. That legislation also proposes adding a rider representative to your board. Why not act now? Invite the chair of the new Riders Advisory Council to participate in all WMATA committee meetings as if he or she were a non-voting committee member. You could do that informally. Finally, should federal officials be added to this board? An open question. But we believe this legislation provides a unique opportunity for you to look into the board's own governance procedures, perhaps with some outside help. Maybe the composition of tomorrow's board should be somewhat different. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Jack. Our next speaker is James McGurl. The subject, Metrobus safety issue.
Agenda. I'm not being paid. Bus operators have asked me a question when I speak to the board on several years. Bus side view mirrors on the driver's side have a blind spot in them when they go. Senior bus management has been notified. They have not taken any action. They say they have no money to make the correct adjustments. 2 serious accidents, I'm going to raise this right now just for a second, because of the blind spot. About a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a 3rd and D Northwest, a 25-year-old woman was killed. Prior to that, you had the Bonds case, which is in the general counsel's office, a lady that was seriously injured. The mom has to raise a daughter, was unable to work for the rest of her life. The cost to Metro will be $5 million, which is the limit of your liability. $5 million in taxpayers' money. Over and above $5 million, the cost to the insurance carriers, if you keep reserves, which you do not keep reserves, would be unlimited. The second case, where the lady was killed, is not in court yet. You had 1,400 buses. If you took $200 each to retrofit the mirrors, it would cost $285,000. Consulting contracts come before safety, it appears. So where is your priority? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGurl. And without objection, we'll ask staff to report back to us on what you've raised. The next speaker is Jeffrey Krauthammer. I may have mispronounced the name. The subject is Metro Access.
This week it's taken more than an hour and about 15 miles out of the way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Our next speaker, who's certainly not a stranger to me, is Ms. Doris Ray, coming to address Metro Access. See you, Doris.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the WMATA board. First, I want to express the appreciation of the Independent Center of Northern Virginia and of myself as a Fairfax County resident for the stewardship of Chairman Kaufman as chairman of the WMATA board. And we look forward to working with the new chair. The Independent Center of Northern Virginia and the Northern Virginia disability community, which we serve, comes to you today with one simple message. Metro Access performance under the new contract with MV Transportation or whoever must meet and or exceed ADA performance standards. And the WMATA board and WMATA staff must aggressively meet its obligation under the Americans with Disabilities Act to monitor and ensure compliance by the Metro Access contractor and its subcontractors in terms of their performance in on-time performance, reliability, time on vehicle, customer service, and all of it. In the waning days of the old contract, we have seen abysmal performance. We've also seen many problems to the life of the contract, the old contract. But there seems to be an attitude in the time, in the last 3 months during the transition to a new contract, that the old contract didn't matter and performance didn't matter. If that's an example of WMATA monitoring its obligation, we need a change.
Yours. Our next speaker is Ron Hartman with Connex, the subject Metro Access.
Good morning. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to make a very brief statement to you. I am Ron Hartman. I'm Senior Vice President for Business Development with Connex North America, which is an international transportation company, which is North American headquarters right here in Silver Spring. In North America, we have 12,000 employees, and we are the largest bus, rail, and paratransit operator in this continent. By way of background, I was formerly general manager of the Maryland Transit Administration, and I've really been involved with paratransit most of my career. In the room also is Sharon Crenshaw, who was our corporate GM for paratransit and proposed GM here. According to what we learned at the staff debriefing, we lost in the procurement process because the winning proposer was about 20% lower than everyone else's proposed, including ours. And although I believe contractors should live by their prices, today I'm here to ask you to do what you have to do to fix the situation. As a daily rider in the capital region, every rider deserves the very best possible service that Metro can provide. In doing so, I'd love to say that our observation of how we got to this point, it's fairly simple. After issuing the request for proposals, which called for planning, applying best practices, recruiting top talent, and developing a realistic operating plan, our experience was that at the end of this, the only thing that really mattered was price. And it was price over quality, which I think was resulting in stranded customers and a request for more money. If the real cause for this was that staff provided incorrect data, then all of the bidders were equally victimized. So my message today is simply, despite all that, I think you understand your highest priority is the customers, and you need to do what is right to fix the situation. If more money is offered, I would only ask that, as the gentleman from First Transit mentioned, that at some point when things stabilize, you consider rebidding this contract and let us all compete on an even playing field. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hartman. Our next speaker is Bobby, it looks like Coward. Organization listed Direct Action, Metro Access.
Everybody in this room, I'm pretty sure, know about the abysmal and unsatisfactory service that WMATA has been giving to people with disabilities. I just want to hear you at least a complaint that this happened to me today, this morning. I was planning on to Denver for a strategy meeting. I called to book my reservation. I've been a Metro Access member since May. I called to make my reservation. They said I was inactive. I am no longer on the list. All right, and I just took a made reservation and took a trip January 11th. And I went to HUD for speech for it and the strategic planning meeting. So as we speak today, I am off the Metro Access list. For reasons I don't know why. So the abysmal service, again, this is just abysmal service delivery. But I have to try to find out why I'm off the service, off membership roster. But again, reviewing the MV contract, you know, they have standards of the, of course, $210 million, $350 million, and the $6 million performance. I want to say about the performance, as my colleague Doris Reyes said, performance standards. You know, to meet 93%. Metro needs to monitor that and put time guidelines on that. If they cannot sustain a 93% service delivery, they should not be awarded any bonuses. That'd be a waste of money. That's going to take time. That, you know, we must monitor that, and we must have an accurate complaint process. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker is Darnice Bush. Subject again: Metro Access.
Gentlemen, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to share firsthand my experiences and Metro Access. My name is Darnice Henry Bush, resident residing in Ward 8. I'm mobility challenged. I use a cane and I also use a chair. So in that respect, I'm much luckier than a lot of people that use Metro Access, because if you use a wheelchair, a lot of people can't get out of their chair, and they're really stuck like 4 or 5 hours. Fortunately, I have been stuck only to the maximum of 3 hours because I could transfer. Let me give you an example of my biggest problem with Metro Access is I work every day. I've been a Metro Access rider for at least 10 years and employed during that time. Prescription rider, as you know, means a person that travels basically the same times a day during the week, so you don't have to call in and reschedule. However, even with that, without having to call in every day to change my schedule, I've been tossed around and just disregarded as a person and treated more like a commodity. I'm treated like a person that doesn't have personal responsibilities. I'm treated like a person that doesn't have a job. My schedules just don't apply. With the new services, MV the major change that I noticed is that the driver of the vehicle no longer has the right to make his run his manuscript, his transport, the way he wants to according to his time. I rode yesterday morning. My pickup was 6:25 a.m. and the driver picked me up on time. However, he was told by the dispatch to proceed to his next person, which was 9th and R Street Northwest. Then he was told to proceed to Bryant Street Northeast. And en route to Bryant Street Northeast, he told the dispatch, please check to see if that individual will be riding, because they didn't ride the previous day, and he had been told that they had retired. They waited until he arrived at Bryant Street, waited 5 minutes, and came back and told him that that person was a late cancellation, but he must proceed to 13th and Oak Street Northeast before he dropped me or the other passenger.
I could ask you to sum up. Certainly, we need to hear your story. I would ask you to please, I'd be happy to take that personally. I'm sure Ms. Mack as well, but we need to complete our agenda here. So if you could please sum up.
Well, basically, that was it. I rode around for an hour or so. I have a mobility challenge, and I can't stand for long. Ride for more than an hour or 2 hours at a time. I basically cannot hardly walk when I get off the bus.
Thank you, Ms. Bush. You deserve better. Our next and final speaker is Ronald K. Bethea, I may be mispronouncing the name, President, Sedan Service Plus. Presume the topic is Metro Access.
Good morning to the board and the rest of the community. Took an opportunity to come out this morning for this very important hearing. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity for these 2 minutes. My name is Ronald Bethay. I'm president of SST. We're the first limousine company that has chartered with the DC government to provide wheelchair accessible black car service here in the nation's capital. I'm also wearing another basic cap. Because I formed a nonprofit organization called Sedan Service Plus. We're working in conjunction with the Small Business Development Center at the University of the District of Columbia. We've been successful in getting BB&T Bank and several other lenders to provide financing for cab drivers, limousine drivers, taxi cab companies, and limousine companies that are registered with the DC Taxi Cab and Limousine Commission here in the District of Columbia to purchase wheelchair accessible SUVs and minivans to be put into the taxi cab and limousine industry here in the District of Columbia. What is very important for you, the audience to know is presently we have operating in the District of Columbia 6,500 taxi cabs, 6,500 taxi cab drivers. There is only one company with 5 wheelchair accessible vehicles. Within the surrounding counties, with taking consideration Red Top, Barwood, and other operating taxi cab companies, you only have 119 wheelchair accessible vehicles operating. One of the concerns that we have concerning the new contract that's been awarded to MVP Transportation Services, they're talking about reducing the amount of overflow, which are work that is being contracted out to cab companies that are presently working with that Metro Access contract to provide transportation services. Also, the fact that with your van services here in Washington, D.C., the 3 taxi cab van services that you have with people to call for cabs, you only have approximately 250 calls coming in from the disability community here in Washington, D.C., and these people who use traditional collapsible wheelchairs because they know, and Tony, the individual operating managers of those taxi cab call services, that the cab fleet services in the city don't have wheelchair accessible vehicles in their fleets. And I think it's very, very important that the community know that the number one problem that the drivers are having with this financing program in UDC, they want to know where their work is going to come from to pay for these vehicles. They're about $38,000 brand new. And we would like to be able to have MVT Transportation Services work with the Small Business Development Center in providing those opportunities for those drivers as they purchase these vehicles and they come online. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bethay. Now we will, let me ask particularly for our Metro Access customers who have made a point of coming here today, I'm going to charge my colleagues with moving with alacrity as we go through the rest of our agenda, and we will be taking the time to pull out for separate discussion what is carried as administrative action number 5 so we can engage in a discussion so we can get more information as well so you know firsthand what we're trying to do to get you better service. With that, I will turn to Mr. White for a report by the General Manager.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. If my monthly report is in front of you right now, and clearly I think the most important issue that we need to address is that which most of our speakers have spoken about this morning, which is the transition on our Metro Access services. The staff is prepared today, Mr. Chairman, if this is the appropriate time, where Pamela Wilkins could come up and try and give the public and the board an update on our actions on what has been a very difficult transition period, and staff certainly apologizes for the difficulties that have occurred during this period of time. If that's appropriate, or if you want to wait until later in the agenda.
Colleagues.
We should do it now.
All right.
If I could,
we'll move ahead then, and what we'll do then immediately after hearing your report is I'll entertain a motion on administrative action number 5.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask that Pamela Wilkins comes up and joins us at the table so that we can give you a complete report, sort of a day-by-day assessment of that which has transpired thus far, which is clearly unacceptable, and again, for which I apologize, and I know the staff clearly apologizes as well, and to give you all a general assessment of where we are today as of this Thursday and what we can all expect as we move forward. Ms. Wilkins?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I want to start by acknowledging the members of the public who spoke earlier about the need to improve paratransit service in the region. Everyone in this room knows it's been many years of hard times for our customers. All of you who spoke are so very correct, and that's why WMATA selected an experienced contractor who does offer better management tools and technologies so that Metro Access can more quickly respond to customer issues and offer more effective service. We do know here at Metro that transportation is an essential service, and it equals freedom. It's a freedom that the majority of the population can take for granted, while the elderly and disabled persons don't have that luxury. We are very sorry that so many of our customers have had a bad experience during this transition. We knew there would be challenges. We didn't count on phone line problems and data issues, which I will discuss in a moment. WMATA staff and MV Transportation, present here today, are going to do whatever it takes to get this service operating at a level of quality that is acceptable to all concerned, but especially our own customers. As I previously mentioned, the prior contract had a lot of problems, which have been well documented in the past. On September 23, 2005, MV Transportation was awarded the new services contract. Over the last 3.5 months, they have worked very diligently to install new tracking scheduling software, reorganize the subcontractor fleet, contact all 16,000 customers to verify data, hire new drivers, and put new vehicles into service. Last week, MV Transportation began and on Sunday completed the takeover of reservations and trip delivery on the new service contract. They gradually assumed responsibility for the 4 service zones to allow for a short break-in period for each new set of customers. To give you perspective on what our travel pattern has been, 5,000 is a very robust number. 5,000 trips scheduled per day is pretty high. On Tuesday, the first full day of service after the holiday, 5,200 trips were scheduled, 5,300 yesterday, 4,900 a little lower today. As I mentioned earlier, there is a huge volume of incorrect customer and subscription trip data received from the previous contractor. This has caused MV to run subscription trips where none were expected and to recover those not scheduled. MV has already corrected a large number of records and should have the vast majority completed within 2 weeks. For example, all subscription trips, about 45% of the total, will have been handled at least twice by then and corrected as needed. MV does ask that customers who ride infrequently contact them during slow hours and get their records updated as soon as they can, because we know that if you haven't been riding recently, it's possible you've got a data issue. The Department of Communications is also developing a web application that will allow persons to confirm their trip and personal information online. Metro Access staff will contact the customers when this feature is operational, and that should be very, very soon, so you can avoid the phone lines that way. MV has experienced extremely heavy call volume, 4,000 calls received between Metro Access and the customer service call center on Tuesday. That's about double what we would normally see. Confirmation calls were very high. People didn't know what was happening. They wanted to call when they might not normally. General information calls, about 30 to 40% of the total of those calls were general information. Where's My Ride calls, also up due to trips being scheduled with bad information. Calls are taking much longer now because when people call, the dispatchers and reservationists are confirming their data. So that's causing jam-ups in the queue. Also, now for the fourth time, Verizon is on site attempting to correctly configure two new phone lines that were purchased in December and installed to handle the obvious additional phone traffic that was going to happen with the transition. Unfortunately, those lines have been unavailable, and it's exacerbated the wait times. MV has hired 10 temporary employees who are working off of cell phones to handle lengthier inquiries and brought over another 10 trapeze-trained dispatchers to handle the call volumes. And fortunately, starting yesterday afternoon and today, we are already seeing a drop in call handling times as a result and queuing. MV has hired over 200 new operators with 50 more in this week's training class. They are rapidly learning. They're adopting the MDT AVL units, but they're still learning to navigate under real-life conditions. The reason that this large number of drivers were hired is because the new contract calls for significantly fewer taxicab rides because the MDT AVL allows for real-time tracking of vehicle locations. The idea being if someone's late, to be able to accelerate that trip and get to the pickup point as soon as possible. There are a couple of new features I'd like to talk about. In order to better handle emergencies and recovery of critical trips, dialysis being a very good example of that, MV created a special coordinator position. Steve Newby arrived yesterday, and he is establishing a hotline to address critical issues, such as a dialysis appointment. And he is contacting all the regional centers, I believe it's around 39 by last count, to ensure that all of us are on the same page with regard to subscription trips. Thus far, the response has been very positive, and we are hoping that that will result in a very significant improvement in service to those who have to get there today. Metro Access staff is providing daily service messages on the WMATA homepage to keep our customers updated on the contractor's activities. Also, we've distributed flyers on board the vehicles with information on the transition. And we would like to remind customers that they can confirm and cancel and soon make reservations on the IVR, the Interactive Voice Recognition System, saving them a lot of time. So for those persons who need to confirm that they have a trip or cancel one, they can do that now, right now, on the telephone without having to talk to a live agent. And then in about 45 days, the IVR will be configured to accept reservations. And Leona's group is developing a web application to do the same. And that will be available shortly. We will let you know about that. We also, with the guidance of Mr. Graham, are looking to expand and enhance the free ride program. That is a program whereby Metro Access patrons, if they are able to do so, can ride free on our fixed route bus and rail systems. Also, there is in preparation, in cooperation with COG, probably a web application. It is a repository of all information for persons who need paratransit services. There's a vast array of providers and funding sources. Metro Access is the ADA paratransit provider, but by no means the only game in town. And we want to make sure that our patrons know about all their travel options. I've talked about a lot of things. And for people who have had a late trip, a missed trip, a hard time this week, or been sitting longer than they're accustomed to, I personally apologize. All the things we are doing don't mean much to you when you've been left behind. We recognize that. We pledge, along with MV, to do everything that we can do. The technology that we've implemented, will absolutely improve trip validation, emergency scheduling, and overall customer service and response. But we know we have a long way to go. I'm not in a position to ask for patience, but I think I'm going to do it anyway. The Metro Access staff who work for me have worked extremely hard, as has the contractor, to correct data, to quickly respond, and to try to implement new processes to make sure that everyone is served in the way that they deserve to be served. I thank you for your attention and your time.
Right, I'll turn to my colleagues. We, in addition to Ms. Wilkins and, of course, the general manager, it's my understanding that a John Monson, who is the president, is here from California and also available to answer questions my colleagues may have.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir, Mr. Yule.
Appreciate the riders, the citizens coming out and you know, letting us know some of the challenges they've incurred. And as we just heard from staff, you know, there are going to be problems, challenges, issues when you're going through a transition like this and of this magnitude. But I think all of us are certainly supportive of the fact that a change needed to be made with the previous provider, and we spent not just months but several years trying to get to the point that we could indeed make a change for the better. That being said, there's some problems, and those problems need to be resolved in a timely manner. And I guess the first question, and again, I appreciate the presentation by staff, is what are we going to do to monitor the new contract and the contract provider and their performance? I would follow up by simply asking, what's the current staffing level, the WMATA staffing level that's associated with the administration of this particular contract? What are we going to do in terms of immediately remedying the problems being experienced by the riders and a timetable for doing such? And then finally, we must, as a board, take responsibility. And so I would suggest to my colleagues and the chair that a special ad hoc task force be appointed that will have representation, at least two members from this board, along with staff and members of the Metro Access group and riders, to review, listen, and recommend solutions to solve the challenges that we've heard here today, whether it's a ridership problem or whether it's administrative problem, as soon as possible. We can't let this continue to fester without bringing closure to it, so that our riding public can be satisfied that we're committed to this the paratransit program and that we want it to be one of the best in the country.
Any objection to Mr. Yule's proposal? Hearing and seeing none, we'll ask staff to coordinate that so we can make that happen. Who else would like to address the issue?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Deegan.
I have a couple questions. Ms. Wilkins, you stated that September 23rd, MV was awarded the contract for the services. And over the last 3.5 months, they were contacting all 1,600 customers to verify the data. Having done that, how do we have this bad data in the system?
Well, unfortunately, not everyone responded to us. The subscription trips in particular were of concern because they tend to be very frequent. But everyone was contacted to the extent possible. What we discovered, though, is that some people didn't get back to us, or that they felt that their data, they'd been getting their rides without much issue, and so they felt their data was okay. We're discovering now, though, that there was a certain familiarity between some customers and operators. Operators would tend to compensate when necessary. That wasn't always the case. If you recall, under the prior contract, missed trips, late trips were endemic. We certainly had no reason to believe that there was that much of a familiarity, but we are discovering that there was some of that. Obviously, our communications with our patrons are just beginning. Having seen what we've seen with this data problem, I would estimate it's going to be a weekly issue for us, that we will continue to cross-check, communicate, and validate to the extent that we can. And as I've already mentioned, every time someone calls in for a reservation or dispatch call, their information is validated right then. So we're hoping within the next couple of weeks that that process will be largely eliminated. It's just for those persons who don't write us very often, we're concerned we're still going to have a few of those outliers for a good while. So that's why we're going to try to do, again, another couple rounds of contacts for everyone, just in case they happen to be a monthly or an every 6 months rider.
One other thing, you stated that MV has hired over 200 new operators with 50 more in this week's training class. What were they were supposed to have 255 vehicles in operation.
But remember, sir, that 255 vehicles includes those that are held at the operator, subcontractors. The vehicles that are used for Metro Access, except for taxi cabs, are the 255. They belong to the contractor until they're turned over to WMATA. Let me give you an example. At the end of the Logisticare contract, WMATA paid for some vehicles to be transferred to MV.
But they're actually owned by WMATA.
They are owned by MV. They are owned by MV.
We paid for them.
And we transfer title.
Not our asset anymore?
No, sir, not for the time being. They're going to be turned, most of those will be, of course, turned over within the next couple of years. We had several new vehicles, but they do. MV does.
Monitor that?
Absolutely,
sir. Make sure
it's
being done correctly?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
I've been given this photograph of a boat. It looks to me maybe 30, 40 Metro Access vans are behind our facility at Pensy Drive.
Our intern, yes, sir.
What's with these vehicles?
Those vehicles are going to be salvaged, sir. They're past their useful life.
How many are there?
I don't remember, but I'll find out. I do not recall. I've frankly been more worried about the 255 than the ones that we're getting rid of.
I wish you'd look into that.
I sure will.
I view this as an asset of this authority, you know, regardless, since we paid for them.
It indeed,
and,
yes.
And that we ought to be able to keep track of them and have some accountability for that.
I do, sir. I just don't have the number with me. I'll get it to all the board members.
I for one, am not very happy, and I think that we have to have a very quick response to this problem. Otherwise, I think MV might be looking at being characterized as a poor performer. And what remedies under the contract do we have to deal with the poor performance of a contractor?
Under the contract, sir, we have both incentives and disincentives. We have asked for a number of goals, but the most important one, I think, for our customers today is the on-time performance goal. And the incentive level is higher than that's at 95%, is higher than the on-time performance goal itself. And there are disincentives in the opposite direction. In other words, if they do not perform, then we take money from them.
I've heard in phone calls I've received and what I've heard here today, their on-time performance isn't very good.
It is not up to the standard which we expect them to make after the data problems are solved. We would have liked to have seen a much smoother transition. Yes, sir, I believe it is lower. It has been lower.
I'm very disappointed, and I guess I'm disappointed not only with the contractor, but with WMATA staff. I have very little faith that they can get this job done in a quick manner. Back some months ago, and I was I opposed renting that extra floor in Silver Spring for what it was going to cost. But this board agreed to do that so we would have a smooth transition. And in my view, we've had anything but a smooth transition. I think it has to be corrected, and it has to be corrected forthwith.
Yes, sir. We understand that. Our patrons have made it very plain to us that they expect better, and we pledge to give them better.
Well, in my view, if not, then we have to find some people that can do it.
Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think, you know, the whole point of moving away from Logisticare to MV was to improve these services.
Exactly.
You know, these were not problems that, you know, had just occurred in the last week. You know, these are I've been on this board, this is my eighth year, and we have wrestled with improving Metro access every single year that I have been on this board. And certainly for the past 4 to 5 years, you know, we have really been struggling with these issues. And so we determined we're going to move away from this one contractor and pick a new contractor, and things are going to get better. And what instead has happened, and I have to agree with Mr. Deegan, what instead has happened is we've been thrown into a crisis. You know, we have phones that are not working. And that troubles me very deeply, because phones can be fixed. And you know something else? Phones can be fixed quickly. And yet what we found was that this problem continues, if I'm not mistaken, until today in one form or another. We still haven't even got the phones ready to go. Then we have this new contractor come on, and they're not on but a few hours. And they tell us, oh, we need another $1 million. They had barely started, and they want another $1 million. And so we look at that, and I think we do have to look at that in a very constructive way. And I know there's a commitment here to move away from taxis. We've been using taxis under Logisticare probably to the extent, we're told, of 30% of the service. Am I right? Give or take. And so we had a very ambitious goal to reduce taxi reliance on taxis to 5%. And in the process of moving from 30% to 5%, we may have gotten ourselves into a real pickle. And I look at what the alternative is here on an annual basis, and it appears to me at first glance that we're going to have a lot greater cost if we go back to greater reliance on taxis. But what's missing from this narrative is the cost of the operations associated with the capital expenditure of $914,129. It's not here. And unless these vehicles move once fully equipped, as you suggest that they should be, if they don't move, they're of no utility, obviously. And so what are the operational costs associated with these 55 additional vehicles, which MV now tells us, hours into their contract, that they just can't do without? What's the operational budget?
MV discovered 6 weeks into their contract, after being given information by Logisticare rather late in the game.
So what's the answer to my question? Just stay with my question, please. What is the operational cost associated with outfitting 55 vehicles, including insurance, to the tune of $914,129.93? That's the capital cost. What is the cost of operating these vehicles?
As far as we can determine right now, looking at the data, sir, what we're dealing with here is a change in the peaks. We don't anticipate that there will be much in the way of additional hours. We can't promise that at this moment because we've had only 2.5 days of normal service. But at this point, what we're seeing is a shifting of the peak and the peak demand.
Wilkins, I'm going to interrupt you because you're not being responsive to my question. I mean, either you know or you don't know how much it's going to cost for these 55 vehicles, once insured and equipped, to move.
I do not know.
They're not going to move automatically. They're not going to move by some miracle. They're going to have to move with somebody behind the wheel. I assume they're going to need fuel. I assume there are going to be other costs associated with it. Do you know what the costs are associated with this, or does our newest friend from California know the costs associated with this?
I think I started out by saying, sir, that I don't know. And all of those operational costs are included in the hourly cost. Okay.
Well, we hope that MV will absorb it. But there's at least a possibility that they're not going to absorb it.
That's correct.
And I don't think, Mr. General Manager, I don't think it's a responsible proposal to come before us today and say that we need $914,129.93, you know, put to the penny even, without being able to tell us, give us some idea of the expense of the operations of these vehicles. I mean, I don't know how others feel, but I'm very uncomfortable saying, okay, fine, hand me the checkbook for $914,129.93, and without knowing, without having any idea whatsoever from staff or anyone in this room, apparently, of what it's going to cost potentially to operate these vehicles.
I will simply say, sir, that at this juncture, we don't anticipate any additional cost.
I don't know if I can answer whether it's responsible or not. I think it's premature, and I think it's partial, and I think the staff has moved quickly with what they think they need to do on an interim basis without knowing what the complete set of answers are, in the spirit of trying to move quickly to address an issue that they see manifesting itself right now. However, I think we don't have the full assessment to be able to give you the kinds of answers that you are looking for right now. And I sense certainly that there's a degree of discomfort associated with that, and I can certainly understand that. Certainly from the customer's point of view, it is our job, no matter how it is done, to get their trip out there. Our goal was to try to move towards a fleet that was largely a dedicated fleet and to minimize the need to use taxi cabs, because there are issues associated with taxi cabs, not the least of which is they're not equipped with the same kind of technology that a dedicated fleet is. And that's what all the diagnostics told us earlier. We're going to be much better off if we can accomplish that. However, I think we've kind of bitten off a little bit, you know, more than we can chew at this moment, because there is a level of uncertainty. And I think during this continued interim period, we probably won't be able to achieve our objective as soon as we would like, but I think it's the responsible thing to do is to use taxi cabs as much as we have to, despite the limitations, to meet the service demands until we can know with greater certainty how to right-size this service with the right amount of dedicated vehicles, and to be able to answer your questions is to, I know it sounds intuitive to you that there should be more operating costs for more vehicles, and the staff is having difficulty trying to get you to understand that that may not necessarily be the case by the way the contract is set up and how the services are provided on the basis of an hourly cost for service. And what we have right now is not that the amount of trips is not known, it's the distribution of the trips, and there appears to be more of a peaking phenomenon with these trips, just like with our regular route service. We have a very peaked bus system and a very peaked rail system. I think there's more of a peaked set of services for Metro Access than was understood before, and that the data would allow us to understand that. We very much regret the fact that the existing contractor dragged their feet as long as they possibly could to release the information that we needed to have. And for that, we're very disappointed. And if we can get the right information, we can answer your questions.
But you're asking me to set aside common sense, and that's all I've got right at the moment. And
Common
sense suggests to me that in order for these vehicles to move, you know, from a dead halt, that there are going to be costs associated. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to put one question to the president of MV. I saw someone stand up earlier. He stood up very fleetingly, but... Oh, there he is. Can you come forward so I can ask one question of you? And Mr. White, you may wish to answer this question as well. But I'd rather put it to our contractor, since he's now on the payroll. Where are you going?
I didn't know where you wanted to stand.
You're going to the microphone, which is reasonable. You can go to the microphone. That's reasonable.
Oh, yeah. I think we have to amplify his voice.
Come on.
And your name, sir?
My name is John Monsa.
Mr. Monsa, you know, one thing, there's a lot of things that are not clear about this, but one thing that is clear about our current situation is that we've had a perfectly dreadful transition from Logisticare to your company. Can you tell me why we have had such a dreadful transition?
Yes, sir, I'd be more than happy. Pardon my voice, I'm not nervous. I make many presentations. I haven't slept much in the last few days. I'd like to give you an overview from our perspective of what's happened in the last 4 days.
No, no, Mr. Monsa, that's not my, excuse me, Mr. Monsa, you must permit me to ask the question. I just would like to have, others can ask, can give you the opportunity to make a presentation.
I think for the board as well as the audience, we might want to hear what Mr. Monson has to say, and it may provide you an answer, because I think we are all equally concerned over what has happened and what we
and
need to do to ensure.
You can ask that, but I would just like to know my specific question, if I may please, which is, why have we had such a dreadful transition in your opinion? And then if you wish to give your presentation of the last 4 days or whatever, I but first let me have the answer to my question.
Yes, Mr. Graham, I was prepared to answer that question. There's a multiple number of answers to that question, and if you permit me, I'll go through those one at a time. I've personally done in my 29-year career over 100 transitions like this, and there are many issues here that I think your board needs to be aware of. Well, and you heard some comments about the dreadful service for the last few days. Some of the issues lie with the policies under which Metro Access operates. They're contained in this Metro Access Guide. You were asked to provide service to those standards. One of the things that's occurred is that your policy calls for a curb-to-curb paratransit service, meaning of a particular place. We have discovered in the last 2 days that the prior contractor, going in excess of your policy, was going into buildings to retrieve people. Part of why people have been stranded, and I'll give you an example here. There's a lady named Michelle from the BMA Northeast Dialysis Center said that the drivers always came in while they were en route or called on their cell phones to their patients from their dialysis center into the paratransit vans. Services are not contained in your policies and go beyond them. And we were not aware until 2 days ago that that was occurring. So many people are waiting inside a building, phone call from a driver on a cell phone. We didn't know about cell phones. It's not containing your policies. It's not containing what you asked us to do. Those kinds of misunderstandings of policies are leading to confusion, because we're providing service the way you asked us to do it, and the customers have had a previous experience. And that's generating then many phone calls, because the passenger is waiting inside a building expecting the driver to come in and get them, or expecting a telephone call that we weren't prepared to do, because that was not contained in what you asked us to do. And I don't believe your staff or anybody else knew this was occurring, but that was a common occurrence among the system. The second thing that's happened is we were asked to provide a shared ride service to improve productivity. Productivity meaning the number of passengers carried per revenue hour. That means that passengers are sharing rides. In the past, many passengers were not sharing rides. And as a result of sharing rides, obviously, when you're making multiple stops on a tour, the passengers are riding longer than they used to. That was the design that our company was asked to implement. And that's also causing a lot of negative comments from passengers, who many of whom were used to riding in a taxi and going directly from point A to point B. The second thing that's caused difficulty with the transition has been day after we were awarded this contract by this board, I moved here. I've been living here full-time since that day. I've had a staff of 70 people here. We asked for, on the day after the transition, a complete computer data list of all of your Metro Access customers. I didn't get that list for 6 weeks. I was told we didn't need all the data, that maybe we could get some fields and not others. The data we were provided in electronic form contains over 15,000 names and addresses. Working with your staff, we mailed out letters to every single person who arrived at the system. We didn't get many responses back. In fact, what we've discovered since then is many of the patrons of your system, your customers, the address information in their record were wrong. So the mail didn't get to them because they didn't live there anymore. Metro, in fact, I can, Mr. Shepard on my staff, who's back there, I'd like to share with you 1/6
of the data we've collected by phone in the last 2 weeks on incorrect data. There's people that are in the electronic database that say they're ambulatory and they're in wheelchairs. There's people that have incorrect phone numbers so we can't call them. There's people that don't live there anymore. There's people that are deceased. It is very difficult.
Mr. Monson,
yes,
let me just ask one quick question. Is this information that was maintained by LogistiCare or maintained by Metro?
This information was maintained by LogistiCare. When we asked for it, we were told they had to get it out of the corporate office in Atlanta. It's like any computer database, it's readily transferable. Just yesterday, let me give you an example of it. We picked up a severely disabled rider yesterday who was unable to speak because of his disability. The driver followed his instructions and took him to where the record said he was supposed to be dropped off. And this is a subscription rider, someone that rides every week. This was his first experience with us. When we get to the location to drop him off, someone comes out of the house and says, I don't know who this person is. What's he doing here? He's unable to communicate with us. We're finally able to find a member of the family, and we were informed they moved 2 years ago. How are we to know that? An example of thousands that we're getting that are generating many phone calls and flooding our operations center. The next issue is one that we explained during our interview. You asked us to provide many more dedicated vehicles. In other words, vehicles that had mobile data terminals, safety cameras, employee drivers rather than contract drivers. Your system, RFP, calls for 1 million revenue hours of service a year, and that requires 500 drivers, about 2,000 hours a year. The system didn't have that many drivers before, so we've trained a large number of new drivers. We've given them over 100 hours of training each. Some practical experience, and we've had the things that are our fault in this. Some of these drivers are inexperienced and have made mistakes as we discover them. And I'd ask you to consider for a moment, if you were to change your entire route system tomorrow and add 40% new drivers to Metro Bus, you would also probably experience some issues with individual. I've done a number of things to correct the problem. First of all, I brought in an additional 20 people in the last 2 days that are staffing the call center. So temporary employees who are just messages so we can call people back, and experienced people from other locations all over the country to try to correct these data issues, which are problematical for us. We have established for the dialysis centers a special hotline, and we are contacting each dialysis center, and we're sending them information so they understand who we believe we're transporting right or wrong. And let me give you another example. Abby from BMA Bethesda relayed to us just yesterday that the address for her dialysis center that we got on the subscription rides for all these people was wrong, and that the facility had moved 2 years ago. So the record we had was that we were going here, and in reality the passenger needed to go here. We've since fixed that. So these records are being addressed one at a time. I realize the service has been bad. We're into the third day of this service, which is extraordinarily complex to operate. I'm not here to make excuses. We're spending every resource and every amount of money we have without asking for reimbursement to fix this problem, and we take it very seriously.
Chairman.
Well, Mr. Linton wanted to speak.
Well, actually, there's a different order. First, I just need to check to make certain Mr. Graham has completed this initial round of questions.
I just had one final question, which is, do you think that you're going to be able to absorb the operational costs associated with these 55 additional vehicles?
I could explain it. You asked us in the RFP to provide 1 million revenue hours of service, and you instructed us to prepare our bid based on operating 255 vehicles. If you divide that, it comes out to right around 3,700 revenue hours per vehicle. We brought up in our interview, and we brought up subsequent to that, that in our opinion, based upon the services we provide in other cities like New York and Baltimore and Philadelphia, that has a very high number of revenue hours per vehicle. It almost means the vehicle would operate 15 hours a day. Most paratransit systems have definite peaks, just like your train and your bus services do, where a large number of people ride in the morning and a large number of people ride in the afternoon. So assuming that the demand stays where you outlined in the RFP in terms of the number of revenue hours needed to provide the number of rides you have, then there would be no operational cost because we're simply shifting revenue hours from 8 at night, for example, to 4 in the afternoon.
You anticipate there will be no additional cost?
Yes. I'm anticipating there will be no additional cost with the caveat that if your ridership grows, incrementally, as your ridership grows, you add more service given the productivity.
Okay, the order of speakers, not speakers, colleagues who've been asked to be recognized is Mr. Solomon to be followed by Mr. Lynn to be followed by Mr. Smith. Mr. Solomon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Mayor Yule has suggested a reasonable recommendation and approach to this matter, and I endorse his suggestion. I've been on this board for 3 years now, and Metro Access is not a new issue, and the problems discussed here by some of our customers, it's not new, and we have to fix them, but it's not an easy fix. And I think it's unfair to characterize the new contractor who's been in and taken over this service for only 3 or 4 days as a poor performer. I mean, we have no basis for that, and I think it's unfair to the contractor. And I think the purpose here today is not to debate the procurement disputes raised by losing bidders, and that's not the purpose. We're here trying to fix the service, and I don't want this record to show that, you know, we are trying to take sides with losing bidders over the winning bidder. We have to keep focus on what's in the best interest of our customers. And those are my comments.
Mr. Solomon, next, Mr. Linton.
Well, I think I endorse everything that Mr. Solomon said front to back. But let me just say, I think that even before Logisticare, there were problems with Metro Access. I know during my 7 years of tenure at FTA, there were problems with paratransit, not just here but throughout the country. So I think this is a service that will always have issues by the nature of the service. So I think I just want to make sure that we are clear about that. But I think we also recognize with the previous provider that there were problems. This board struggled with those problems. We talked about those problems. And staff worked diligently to provide some new issues within our new contract to resolve those problems. But we recognize that in transition that those problems would not be solved overnight, at least I expected they would not be solved overnight, that some of those problems are problems that have been historic in nature. Some of those problems were related to poor data, which were shared with us by staff. So once again, to suggest that within 3-4 days, all those problems were going to be corrected, I think that is fairly naive. The other thing that I would share is that we as a board, some of the issues that are being raised today are issues that we demanded. We wanted cost-effective service. We wanted to reduce the cost of the service. We asked for shared ride. The issues of curb-to-curb is a total different model of delivery of service versus picking clients up within a facility. That requires some operational changes and time changes as well. Some of these things are things that we ourselves have asked for. You can't, on one hand, say you want efficiency, which means there's a different operational model, and then at the same time complain because of that different operational model. So I think we need to be clear about what we expect, what we're trying to provide, and what we're asking the contractor to provide. But all in all, I think we need to step back, take a deep breath, recognize that we've had some challenges in transition. We know that the people in this region deserve better. We as a board are committed to provide better. We put new items within the contract so that we can monitor the contract, so we can monitor performance, so we can know where vehicles are. But those things are going to take some time in order for them to be actuated. That's what we're expecting to happen over the course of the next couple of weeks. We're going to get new data, we're going to have vehicles in place, and we're going to have improved performance. That's what we're working on. That's what the contract calls for. But we need to step back. I think Mayor Yule has made a recommendation that allows us to monitor within this time period the process so that we're getting better and we know how we're getting better. I think that's an opportunity for us to do that. But I think the board right now needs to take a deep breath, think about what we've asked this contractor to provide, recognize that's different than what we've had in the past, and see if we can work to make sure that this is a better service for the people in this region that need it every single day.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a historic day in that I concur wholly with Mr. Linton on his comments. And I want to thank you, Mr. Mansa.
Mansa.
I apologize for the pronunciation for your, I think, earnest and sincere presentation of the issues this morning. And particularly noting on what Mr. Linton said about our desire to operate within the guise of the federal law, the ADA, and that is going to mean shared trips for people who aren't used to shared trips. And, in fact, to recognize that we are in fact, dealing with an unfunded mandate of the Congress in what we are providing here, and that the need to go beyond that, or the desire, perhaps, to go beyond that mandate is strictly limited by our financial capabilities of the jurisdictions involved. And to recognize finally that on our best day, to reiterate, 16,000 names here, on our best day, any tabloid that wants to chase down a person or find a person that has a problem with the service or is having difficulty with the service, on our best day, you'll be able to find one of those people, in so much as we have 16,000 folks to deal with, and I don't think perfection, while it may be a laudable goal, is at all probable or possible in the performance of the work. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hudgens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really think that I want to thank the speakers that came out, most importantly, because I think they have given us a mandate in terms of the service delivery that they expect, and I think that we are committed to providing. I think what we really should be focusing on, and I'm going to ask a question regarding one particular speaker. I agree with our comments as to how we should move forward, but I do want to have an affirmation from Mr. Munson as to how best we can make sure that ongoing we're going to see the progress of improvement for the service delivery. And we did say that shared rides would be a part of the efficiency that we would look to have. I heard this morning that an individual experienced a shared ride, but he had a very difficult experience. What is it that you will be doing to ensure that the routes that are described on those shared rides are clear and that people will still have the efficiency of delivering them to their work sites, to their appointments, et cetera? Not as an independent rider, but still, as in the same manner that we see the service delivery in our bus system.
There are a couple of answers to that. First of all, individual people have problems, and they could be problems with how perhaps they were routed, or problems with the driver and how the driver acted or behaved on their journey. We certainly want to hear about those problems so we can correct them. More importantly, as shared rides increase, you have a policy also that requires 10 minutes of waiting, for example, and in the last few days, 20% of our trips have been what we call a no-show, meaning that people get a record of someone to pick up, but they're not there. And I think a most important thing for the gentleman to get his ride more efficiently is to make sure that we can minimize the number of no-shows by getting the data cleaned up, because every time we have to stop and wait for someone 10 minutes, if somebody else is on the bus, I'm sure they're getting fairly aggravated that they're waiting and waiting and waiting for someone who's not there. And we've seen a substantial amount of people that have these subscription trips who are not there. And we won't know about it until we go for them for the first time. And then when they're not there, then we call and say, why didn't you take your trip today? And we have half of people doing that for every no-show. And what they're finding is, you know, I haven't ridden in a year, in some cases. And in some cases, you know, we've not done a good job of being there on time. So we have to kind of go through that one person at a time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Chairman, I think this discussion has been very, very helpful, and I do appreciate Mr. Munson's description of some of the challenges that you have had in the transition. And, of course, it's always important to hear from our riders, to hear their issues, some of the challenges that they face in using the service, and it just emphasizes to us how we really do have to make sure that these riders are being served in the most effective and efficient manner. We have before us today a proposal to modify the contract to add 55 vehicles. But in light of what has been discussed today, the concern about the status of the data, I'm going to offer a substitute motion. And do now, what's my parliamentarian requires me on that?
You would make the motion. I would seek a second. We'd see if there's discussion and then vote on it.
Great. Okay. I'm going to move that we continue to use the pre-existing practice of utilizing taxi cabs to meet our daily metro access delivery requirements until such time as we have reliable data on the number of dedicated vehicles that are required. Mayor Ewell has also indicated that the need to get some additional data. My motion would allow us to step back for a minute to make sure that we're moving in the proper direction, but at the same time to assure that all the customers who need our service will be getting the service. So
there's a motion. Is there a second?
Question on the motion.
We need to have a second on the motion.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Smith. Mr. Zimmer.
Will the motion, the action include Mayor Ewell's further suggestions on how to move forward with the task force?
Accepted by acclamation when Mr. Ewell mentioned it. So
that is already direction from
yes,
the
sir.
Board.
That is already specific direction. Other comments? I would just, Mr. Deegan.
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I would just add, certainly the information that we've received that I painfully shared with my colleagues and certainly hearing from the very personal, very real experiences of our riders, I'd love to have the chance to let LogistiCare go again, meaning fire them again. As we look at this go-forward motion, I think we also need to revisit the data to ensure that there are not issues potentially of fraud with our previous provider, to ensure we complete any additional audit of that. Secondly, one of the privileges of being chair is you get called by a lot of folk. And I did get calls, a number of them at home, and then followed to the office, both directly from a gentleman running a urology center and some of his patients. And the doctor, with great passion, and I'm not used to passion at 6:30 in the morning, but with great passion did make the case for his customers about what we should be providing for our customers, our shared customers. One of those issues, of course, we do provide service that, when it works, does go beyond the federal mandate as well as it should, because that's a conscious decision we made and we reiterated here, I believe, last year. It is curb-to-curb service, and one of the questions that was raised is, well, how does a person who is severely disabled get from the door to the curb? And that is certainly something that we need to provide, make an effort to provide information to those customers so they know, what services may be available. Since we are the transit provider, there's also human service providers. How do we find that blending? And certainly by state or by jurisdiction to ensure that the people who have severe mobility needs know how those pieces fit together so they can get from point A to point B. So I just ask, without objection, that issue of getting information out be included in what comes back to us from staff. Any objection?
Oh, good last word.
Okay. We have a motion before us. Mr. Deegan.
I have one final question. The people that are certified for Metro Access, that is done by WMATA, is that correct?
It is now done by WMATA. We hired five eligibility specialists at the end of last year, and it is now being done, and there are a couple of things that are occurring. First, the eligibility records are being parsed because some of them are quite out of date.
Doing it before the end of last year.
And let me be more precise. LogistiCare, what happens is a person wants to be made eligible. They apply. LogistiCare then arranges for a ride. They're sent to an assessment center where their physical capabilities are assessed. And those centers actually make the decision, but LogistiCare managed that process. Unfortunate.
Who paid for the centers?
Were that was part of the contract, and that was a cost to WMATA.
Well, my final comment is some might think it's naive since I'm the newest principal member of this board, but I can't for the life of me understand you're giving a contractor for over $50 million they've had since September to set up a system to get this straight, and we funded an entire floor in Silver Spring so they could have that opportunity and still can't get it done. And the calls I get from the dialysis people, you know, and Ms. Wilkins, I've talked to you a number of times on the same person where the problem reoccurs. You know, it's just totally unacceptable in my opinion, but I will support the motion.
All those in favor of the motion before us, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. We now return
Mr.
to the
Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
There were some other items that were discussed in public comment. I'd like to address one of them.
Mr.
Zimmer. Just of time, I'll try to be very brief, but Mr. Corbett from MetroRiders.org did have some extensive comments, and I want to at least pick up on two of them. One related to the action on an independent audit function, and this has come up again and again, and again, some people seem to be under the impression that this is the result of federal legislation that's being talked about and that, you know, everybody's waiting for that. I would have expected that Mr. Corbett would know, at least, that, in fact, members of the board have been calling for this since long before there was a Davis bill, and that this board has taken action to move in that direction already, and that, in fact, I believe we have an agenda in a matter of weeks that will act on it. So that there will be no further doubt, it is this board's intention to do this year, and that should be coming up very soon. But there was another point that Mr. Corbett made that concerns me that I guess I would have thought it would have been dealt with, and that is the availability of documents. And as he has and some others have before, he called for the documents for instance, for board meetings to be made available to the public. When they are distributed to board members. And that, I think, is eminently reasonable. That is certainly the practice, as far as I know, at least in jurisdictions on our side of the river. And with the ability to use the Internet now, it's easy because you just post them. And, you know, they're downloadable then. And I was surprised to hear that these are still being delayed. So is he incorrect, or is there a problem getting these documents posted when they're distributed the week before the board meeting? Mr. White, can you explain that?
No, the documents are posted on Tuesday, as has been our practice before. There has been a discussion about whether that could be posted at an earlier time frame. There has been a difference of opinion that the staff has heard about that particular issue.
Thank you, Mr. White. Mr. Chairman, I move that the board direct the documents that are made available on the web at the time they are distributed to the board.
Second. Seconded by Mr. Deegan. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. The motion carries.
Thus now there's no ambiguity. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Next, we turn to the report by the Planning and Development Committee. Back to you, Mr. Zimmer.
Mr. Chairman, if I could go back to the General Manager's report for a minute.
Mr. Deegan.
He mentioned in there, and I just want to mention again, that we've done our 1,000 overhaul of a bus, a Metro bus, 1430. I had the opportunity to go out and view that bus. It's remarkable. It looks like a brand new bus, and it's just amazing that we've been able to do 1,000 of those. And the people involved in that certainly need our support, and they receive my admiration and congratulations for making that possible. So for those involved in that, I thank you very much.
Solomon.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I won't delay. But on the digest, page 2, for the first time, I see that on January 25th, there's going to be an inaugural ride of one of the hybrid buses at the Carmen Turner facility in Prince George's County. I wasn't included on the telephone list. I'm not listed in the digest, but I do want to make public that I do plan to attend and that the oversight must have been inverted. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Planning and Development Committee met on January 5th and has three items for your action today. The first concerns the holding a compact hearing and the release of the public hearing staff report related to the proposed environmental assessments and refinements of the Dulles Corridor Rapid Transit project. Staff seeks approval for the WMATA to conduct a public hearing jointly with the Commonwealth of Virginia on several proposed refinements to the design for the Wheatley Avenue extension that was approved by the board in September of 2004, and to authorize the general manager to release the environmental assessment and to release the public hearing staff report for the EA when available, and further to authorize the GM to release the public hearing staff report on proposed revisions to the general plans and modifications of the adopted regional system as soon as the report is available. There's a resolution identified as item A in your package, and the committee recommends approval, and on behalf of the committee, I move its approval.
Motion, is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Deegan. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries.
Second item concerns a release of the Columbia Pike analysis to the jurisdictions in question, which are Arlington and Fairfax. Staff recommends, and the committee further recommends, that the report be distributed to the jurisdictions for their action on locally preferred alternative, and I move approval.
Motion. There's a second by Ms. Mack. Any discussion? Let the record show that the chair is jealous. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Zimmerman.
Third item concerns the proposed West Ox bus facility. The resolution is identified as item C in your package and would authorize the general manager, approves the public hearing staff report, approves the financial plan, authorizes the general manager to execute the joint use agreement with Fairfax County for West Ox, and includes an amendment regarding the Southeastern Bus Garage. The committee recommends approval, and on behalf of the committee, I move adoption of the resolution.
Second motion. Seconded by Ms. Mack. Any discussion? Mr. Deegan.
I would like it noted that this does not necessarily mean that we're going to construct a $4.5 million body shop at that facility if we have other uses that we can comes before us in a final design.
I didn't know that was an amendment. That's my understanding of the situation.
Your understanding?
I just wanted to
have it noted. Then it will be duly noted. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Anything else, Mr.
Staff also received a briefing on the station access capacity study. That was my report, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman, next we will hear a report by the Real Estate Committee. Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Without objection, I'm going to do this as quickly as possible, unless there's a... If there's a need for amplification on any of these points, you know I'll be glad to stop and amplify, but otherwise...
Let us hold you back.
Thank you. The public session of the Real Estate Committee was held on January 5, 2006, and the following matters were recommended. First, that we approve the allocation of an additional $624,851 in TIF funds to support continued work on the Balsan MU Metro Rail Station Access Improvement Project. This is done on the recommendation of the appropriate jurisdiction. So moved.
Second.
Properly moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries.
We recommend the approval of a property exchange with the National Park Service for property required for the construction and operation of the Mississippi Avenue Water Treatment Facility, and in addition, a further transfer of $242,050 from the Mississippi Avenue Water Treatment Facility project budget to the DC Writers Trust Fund account. I just want to note that we have made sure that we are just acquiring the land that we absolutely need. We're not acquiring additional obligations, and so this has been very carefully pared down. So moved. Both items so moved.
Second.
Seconded. Any discussion? Hearing seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. That motion carries.
We recommend the approval, approve the negotiation and execution of a 5-year lease with the Fairfax County School Board for the use of WMATA property for parking school buses. This would provide to the authority a total 5-year revenue of $696,230, and there's a 90-day cancellation provision within the lease. I move approval.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. That motion carries.
In executive session held on the same day on January 5, 2006, we voted the following recommendations. First, that we authorize the staff to execute the Arlington Bus Garage Joint Development Term Sheet and negotiate a binding sales agreement. This has already been discussed as part of planning and development, and so I don't think any further details are really required here. I move approval.
Second.
Seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. That motion carries.
This next item is very substantial, and it does merit some discussion, or at least elucidation. We recommend the approval of a fee purchase of land under the 3-story food court structure and authorization for the staff to execute a term sheet and negotiate the definitive agreements, including an amendment to the existing ground lease. In October 2005, the owners of the office component of the Bethesda Metro Center project submitted an unsolicited offer to purchase only the land under the 3-story food court building plus 200 associated garage parking spaces for the purposes of developing a condominium project on the food court site. The offer preserves the existing ground lease agreement for the office component, thereby protecting WMATA's revenue stream in the form of a guaranteed minimum rent, participation rent, and capital event participation. On January 5, 2006, the Real Estate Committee approved staff's recommendation for the purchase of the land under the 3-story food court structure, subject to an updated appraisal. And authorize staff to execute a term sheet and negotiate the definitive agreements, including an amendment to the existing ground lease. The definitive agreements will be submitted to the board for approval. I move approval. This is on tap for $11 million, and that is a value which has been attached to this ground on the basis of an appraisal that was done more than a year ago. So I suspect there's a very good chance, in a way, of there being a significant increase in that amount. I move approval.
Second. Moved and seconded by Mr. Smith. Any discussion? Hearing seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr.
Grant. And we recommend that we approve the extension of a negotiation period for the Silver Spring Master Development Agreement. This is a 6-month extension of the deadline in order to negotiate this agreement. I move approval.
Second.
By Mr. Deegan. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries.
And the final item from the Real Estate Committee is an old friend of ours, the Tacoma Metro Rail Station. And here we authorize the staff to conduct a new community planning process. That sounds like more than what it is. We really have in mind a one-day event to be held within the next 6 weeks and proceed the compact hearing on the Tacoma Park. Someone's phone is ringing. The Tacoma Park development project, which has been pending for many years. But we'd like to do one more, not even a day, half a day, if that, to give an opportunity for those of you who are stakeholders particularly those in the District of Columbia, who are concerned about these development issues at the Tacoma Park Metro Station. I move approval.
Second the motion.
Seconded by Ms. Mack. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, mercifully, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we return to Ms. Mack with a report from the Budget Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Budget Committee met on January 12th, and we have the following actions to refer to the board. The approval of safety and security initiatives, which include funding of $12.2 million provided by the Department of Homeland Security to be used for the following projects: $3.7 million for a 5G project to provide below-ground radio system in Arlington and to improve the district system; $1.2 million for bus security to equip buses with security cameras and to install two vehicle locator consoles and monitoring devices; and $7.3 million to build out existing space at Carmen Turner facility for an alternate operations control center. The specific action is to advertise and award new contracts, modify existing construction and engineering contracts, and add two new positions to support the projects. I move approval.
Is there a second to Ms. Mack's motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The chair votes aye. That motion carries.
Thank you. The next item is approval to amend the FYOC 06 system access capacity program to include $100,000 in, I'm sorry, by $150,000, which would include $100,000 for a proposed planning study for the Adams Morgan U Street link. This project would also include the use of $50,000 to implement the program. I move approval.
Is there a second to Ms. Mack's motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Graham. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. The motion carries. Ms. Mack.
Next item is approval to initiate and award professional and technical consultant services for pre-training and promotional testing for the police department personnel. This request is to initiate and award a contract, and the funding is $70,000, which would be available in the approved FY07 budget. I move approval.
Seconded by Mr. Graham. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. The motion carries. Ms. Mack.
Thank you. The next item is to initiate an award of professional and technical government services consulting contract. This is a three-year contract, one base year and two option years, to be funded at $244,000 annually. Partial funding for this contract has been approved in the fiscal 2006 budget, and the balance would be in fiscal 2007. And, of course, the options would be based on available funding in the years in which they would be proposed. I move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Deegan. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you. The next item is approval to amend the FY06 system expansion program for New York Avenue. And basically the proposal is $3.8 million, which would close out all the construction contracts for the New York Avenue station. I move approval.
Second to Ms. Mack's motion.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Smith. Any discussion of the item? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Ms. Mack.
Next item is approval to amend the resolution to revise the scope of work for WMATA in the district's Anacostia Corridor demonstration project. And essentially, the proposal is a reprogramming of funds available in the project because of a change of scope. There's no additional funding necessary. I move approval.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. The motion carries. Ms. Mack.
We also discussed in the meeting the October and the November financials. As indicated by the November financials, there is a projection. There was $14.1 million in additional revenue at the end of November on the plus side, and the expenses exceeded the budget by $11.1 million. A favorable jurisdictional subsidy of $3.2 million was projected on a year-to-date comparative basis. We also talked about the status of a business development and performance budgeting plan. Staff will develop a scope of work for consulting services that are expected to be used during this process. And the all tasks and recommendations in this process are scheduled to be completed so that any implementation that would be needed would be included in the fiscal 08 budget guidelines. I move, that's not approval, that's just an information. Okay. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Mack. The chair will now entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Zimmerman.
If we're up to administrative action, then I move approval of items 1 through 4 and 6 through 8.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Smith. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Zimmerman.
I would note that one of the items that we just passed involves the 8-car train, the move to 8-car trains, and specifically upgrading our train control system so that it can be able to do that. It's, one more milestone along the way. Again, the plan is that by the end of this year, we're looking for 20% of the rail fleet to be able to operate as 8-car trains. And this is an important step along
the way
to that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that the action just taken by the board really meant to also approve the added item, which was not listed, but it's the international travel.
Actually, I did not move that, so if there's an additional item, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to move it, but not included in my motion. So, is that the one that's on the?
Yes, sir.
Without number?
Yes, sir.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the item involving board authorization for international travel to attend an expert meeting at NATO on terrorist threats to metro security.
Okay, for both items, is there a second?
Chairman, I think we need, I will second, but I think you need to note that this is funded by the Department of State, and there are no metro funds.
The Department of State is paying all expenses.
All right.
Those in favor of the motions, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. And now that my colleagues are totally worn out and we've driven off most of the media, I will provide my outgoing remarks as chairman. Normally, what you get from an outgoing chair is his or her over-the-shoulder review presenting the events of the past year in the most attractive light. Let me honor that tradition by simply saying what we set out to do, we accomplished. And what we needed to face, we did, and we did so squarely and publicly, as we did today. Now that we've acknowledged what's past, what I'm most concerned about today is this. Are we up to the task of breaking the habits that hold back not only this authority, but regional transportation as well? Breaking these habits will not be the work of a single person or a single year, and will transcend the individual efforts of those of us who enjoyed the great privilege and greater responsibility of serving as chairman. The first habit we must break is what could be called the monopoly mentality. Folks really do have transportation choices in this region and options. Unless we at Metro recognize and respect that, and develop a true customer focus, both our customers and our funding will, so to speak, walk. While we can be rightfully proud of the service we provide and the incredible growth in service we've seen, we must strive to keep that pride from becoming defensive arrogance. It's not about our jobs, positions, or exalted titles, is about the service we provide, as we are reminded again today. The newly installed Writers Advisory Council, if well employed, and a vigilant press will do more to break this habit than anything else. And I'd like to pause and personally thank Dick, Leona, Deborah Johnson, and all my colleagues who joined in making the Writers Advisory Council happen, and in doing that within the year, so appreciate that. The second habit we need to lose is funding by lowest common denominator. With support from the business and environmental communities, we finally have the attention of our funding partners. Just this Monday, Chris Zimmerman and I were in Richmond making the case before, I believe, Chris, a generally supportive legislative delegation. I also personally thank the District of Columbia City Council for their early action. To our friends in Annapolis, I simply say this: the train's left the station, find a way to get on board. Finally, we must find the vision to develop new habits and perspectives. Metro is not the cover-all band-aid for what ails our transportation networks. However, it is the common link across jurisdictional boundaries and a part of any long-term regional transportation strategy. There is a common assumption that road congestion and rail crowding can and must get better. The next big rail or road project will be the answer. We've got to get away from this magic cure perspective. More often than not, improvements are localized and buy us only a few years of relief. At what point do we admit that this may well be as good as it gets and face the fact that we must encourage fundamental changes in how we work, shop, and play? Regionally, this demand side of the transportation equation is finally being addressed through land use cases that incorporate transportation demand management. Finally, we're beginning to recognize that people really can walk or bike, and that buses aren't just for people too poor to buy a car. And Ms. Mack will drive that point home this next year. We must frankly acknowledge what levels of congestion are in our power to change and what levels we'll have to live with if we remain glued to our steering wheels or only take transit during peak periods. This is not admitting defeat. It's respecting the reality that we can neither simply pave nor rail our way out of our way to perpetual transportation bliss. We must refocus and get serious about managing congestion and expectations. The truth is our long-term transportation needs are such that we need to cobble together funds for all the options, rail extensions, bus rapid transit, and a hot lane network, along with a healthy dose of telecommuting. In closing, I would like to thank Metro staff and my colleagues. This has been a year of scrutiny and overdue change. Some of the scrutiny was uninvited. Some we in fact invited because of our efforts to be more transparent. Personally, it's been as exciting and challenging a year as I have ever known. I'm glad to be followed by Ms. Mack, a colleague with the skills, integrity, and will to accomplish whatever she wants to accomplish. Ms. Max, thanks for all your support for my efforts, and I look forward to returning the favor. And that concludes my remarks. Thank you. And with that, we'll turn to the election of officers. And I'm looking for a script. I'll entertain. Thank you. Mr. Kaufman will call for the election. In the following sequence, for chairman, I'll entertain a motion for chairman, Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much. It's my distinct pleasure and privilege to nominate Gladys Mack as the chairman of the board.
Is there a second to this motion?
I'd be very honored to second that nomination.
Seconded by Mr. Deegan. Is there any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. That motion carries. We turn next to Vice Chairman, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, it's my pleasure to nominate Mr. Charles Deegan as Vice Chair of the Board.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there any discussion of this motion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, the chair votes aye. That motion carries. For second Vice Chairman, I am very pleased to nominate Mr. Zimmerman to get in the queue once again and serve as second vice chair of the board.
And I second that motion.
Properly moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. And that motion carries. We will now turn to the, we'll now watch Ms. Matt grab a plaque. Don't hurt me.
Okay. I won't hit you.
Okay.
I'd just like all the board members to stand. And everybody else can stand too. I have the pleasure to present this plaque to our outgoing chairman, Dana Kaufman. And let me say, as I do this, most of us will remember that Dana's chairmanship started over at the Gallery Place Metro Station among the riders. Mm-hmm. And his commitment at that time was to ensure that we would have a focus on riders. And he certainly has fulfilled that commitment with last night the formal meeting of our Riders Advisory Committee. And I just want to, on behalf of the board, thank you for all the wonderful work that you've done over the past year, and you do indeed have big shoes to fill.
Thank you. thank you. To quickly bring this meeting to a close, reports from the District of Columbia, Ms. Mack?
No report.
Report from WSTC, Mr. Deegan?
No report.
Report from MVTC?
You're not going to let it go, are you?
No. Not yet. Ms. Hudgens? Okay. Before bring this meeting to a close, just note that this is the last meeting with Dick White serving the full meeting as our general manager. Thank you for your many years of devoted service. And also acknowledge that Mr. Dan Tangerlini has been selected, and effective the 16th of February, when he's sworn in, he will serve as our interim general manager. And with that, this meeting is adjourned, and this back has to be.